I love when you put a bunch of people in a room and at the beginning of a meeting, they have no idea why they're all in the same room. Like it doesn't make sense to them. Why am I in this meeting? And by the time they walk out, they're going, okay, I understand why that's important to what I'm trying to get done. And they form these connections and those points of collaboration that really make everything more efficient and help us to take those different perspectives together. Again, to your point, come up with new answers and new processes and, really looking from all walks of life, all different perspectives.
Hi, Smart Community friends. In this episode of the Smart Community Podcast, I am very excited to have Jennifer Sanders back on the show for the third time. Jennifer was also on the podcast back in episode 170 and also episode 284. So make sure you go back and check out these great conversations after you've had a listen to this one. I'm also excited to announce that Jennifer and I will be speaking on a panel together in Barcelona at the Smart Cities Expo World Congress on the 7th of November in 2023. It's going to be fantastic and I am super excited. Okay, back to this episode. So in this episode, Jennifer tells us about what she does with the Dallas Innovation Alliance and some of the projects she's been working on there, including a digital inclusion project and a drones and robotics project. We discuss the different ways the Dallas Innovation Alliance collaborates with other groups and how it's different to a traditional approach, as well as what's changed in the last 18 months since she was last on the show. Jennifer then shares with us a bit about the Urban Resilience Fellows Program and what they're working on, which of course has an interdisciplinary focus and the power of brave conversations and courageous collaborations for solving wicked problems. Jennifer and I finish our chat discussing the emerging trend of the fact that now you can find somebody talking about almost everything or anything within the smart community space and why we need to lean into multi-generational connections and collaborations as the next step for smart communities. As always, we hope you enjoy listening to this episode as much as we enjoyed making it.
Welcome to the smart community, smart regions, smart towns, and smart cities. It's where we live, work, and play. With smart communities, the future starts today. Big data, smart mobility, emerging trends galore. The Smart Community Podcast is what you're looking for.
Hello, Jennifer. How are you today?
I'm well. How are you doing?
I am doing fabulously. Well, let's just jump straight in. I'm excited to have you back on the podcast for the third time. How exciting. I'm really excited to hear about all the things you're doing and what's been moving in this space, the progress. But we'll first dive into tell us about you a little bit in case people haven't listened. We'll put the links for your previous episodes in the show notes. But tell us about your background and what you're passionate about.
So many things. And thank you so much. I always love talking to you. This is going to be fun. But, for those that I haven't met or haven't watched previous episodes, I'm Jen Sanders. I grew up in Washington, D.C. in Chicago and made my way to Dallas almost 20 years ago with the presumption that I would only be here 2 years and then I would go back to one of those other cities. And what I always like to say is part of what kept me here is that Dallas is a city that hadn't quite figured out who it is or who it wants to be. And so there was this youngness and this kind of hunger to be part of that. You know, it was really an opportunity to jump in and say, how do we want to shape the future here as we're kind of growing up a little bit? So that's been part of what I've really loved about the work I do here is you really get to, play off the friendliness of Texans, which is very true, and be able to work with people across all walks of life. So for me, my background's consulting. I love working with a whole lot of different people doing a whole lot of different things. I love learning something new every day. And that's something I've been able to kind of pull together in what I do today.
That's awesome. So before we dive into what you what you do day to day, we'll go broad first because I like to ask everyone this, and it's particularly interesting asking people that have been on the podcast before because if their answer has changed, which is totally fine as well because we're progressing and we're moving. And, you know, this, as we were just before on the pre-chat talking about how things evolve and change. So tell us what a smart community means to you.
A smart community means to me, how are we all aligned toward a common vision, which is improving quality of life through the use of new tools, right? So a smart community means that from the little kid down the street to the mayor, we want everyone to feel empowered to decide what they want this to be. And so from a smart community, smart city perspective, you know, we really think about it, and I really think about it as, are we using new tools to solve old problems that ultimately improve everyone's access to opportunity?
Yeah, I like that. And I think the new tools is a really nice way to put it too, because we haven't mentioned technology, we haven't mentioned data, but we know
that. And that's intentional.
Yeah, right. And I love that because we know that they are tools in our tool belt that we can use, but it's different ways of thinking. It's collaborating differently. It's, yeah, trying a different approach as well, because I know that's a lot of the work that you do as well. So thank you for sharing that. Yeah. That's awesome.
For sure. For sure.
And I also love how you talked about both, you know, the kid down the street and the mayor being feeling empowered, because those two people at those different ends of the spectrum are really important, and they'll feel empowered in different ways, and they'll have to make different decisions in different ways. Therefore, the tools that they need will be different as well. And what I like about this approach is the collaboration piece, which I know you're so strong on, or, you know, that's like a key driver or a value, not to put values in your mouth, but it's a key value for you, just knowing the work that you do. That collaboration piece is so important, because then you can really understand how we might be aligned to the common goal, but it might take different things for each person to get there as well.
Yeah, 100%. And I kind of always joke that I love when you put a bunch of people in a room and at the beginning of a meeting, they have no idea why they're all in the same room. Like, it doesn't make sense to them. Why am I in this meeting? And by the time they walk out, they're going, okay, I understand why that's important to what I'm trying to get done. And they form these connections and those points of collaboration that really make everything more efficient and help us to take those different perspectives together. Again, to your point, come up with new answers and new processes, and, you know, really looking from all walks of life, all different perspectives.
Yeah, and you said something earlier around using new tools to solve old problems, which I think is really key, because these problems that we have, you know, these really wicked problems that we have are quite old problems. Mm-hmm. But I'm keen to hear your thoughts around, you know, solving new problems, because we're probably going to be creating new problems as we go through as well, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we often talk about the law of unintended consequences, right? And so I think as we approach new tools or we approach things, it's got to be with an intentionality and remembering why we're doing it. I think number one, and not plunging ahead blindly, which sounds simple, but isn't always easy, I think, when you get really excited about something. But I think we are inevitably creating challenges, and some of it's not having enough information to know what to prepare for. In some cases, it's that there is literally no blueprint of what to watch out for. And I'm sure we'll talk about AI, and we could talk about privacy implications and things like that, which is always kind of the first thing I think of today, or certainly currently, in terms of we don't know enough yet to really understand the decisions that we're making. But I think if we all know what the end game is and we're all prepared to be agile, which is very hard for government, but if you can find ways to take that pragmatic risk and incremental steps, I think that we'll be able to adapt and try and course correct, you know, as quickly as possible.
Yeah. And I think it goes to that collaboration piece as well. And I guess having diversity through bringing a whole bunch of people together as well. So it's, I mean, it has to be intentional, of course, because it doesn't just happen by accident, but having that diversity of thought and experience, because then people ask those questions. And I think, you know, different questions that when you have different tools and different ways of doing things, they may not have been asked before if we don't, like you said, if we don't have the blueprint. But also what I found particularly in the last little while, and probably from the beginning of when I'm doing work in this space, you've got to be really comfortable with uncertainty, because like you said, if we don't have that blueprint, and you know, that's a kind of a throwaway line of being uncomfortable with uncertainty, but what does that actually mean? But there's like layers to it as well, because to deal with that, you can't just, oh, well, I'm okay with uncertainty, so I know nothing. It's actually knowing what we do need to know, what where rigor needs to be in place, where the risk assessment needs to be done, but also then sitting in the, well, it's like having the kind of foundations or the scaffolding there, but knowing that, you know, the building might look a little bit different to what we originally envisaged, but it's, you know, it's safe, we've thought about it, we've brought the right people involved, and it meets the community need at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm. No, I totally agree. And I think what's always interesting to me is it from the different perspectives that are in a room, things that seem really scary and, oh God, you know, we can't do this. Nobody's done it. But someone might say, do you remember when we were struggling with this project 5 years ago or 10 years ago? This is how we structured it to make, and this doesn't feel as different as you think it is. And one example would be looking at P3 projects around infrastructure or around different types of, you know, heavy capital investment. And one thing that came to mind for me as we were talking about P3s and fiber installation or different things that cities are trying to figure out. And I said, couldn't we look at this like we looked at major park projects? So there is this wonderful park, Clive Warren Park in Dallas, that's built over a highway. And that was built very much through a public-private partnership and mixed investment. And I said, is this really different? Does the type of infrastructure matter as much as we think it is, or can we use the successes and the learnings from executing that project? So I think sometimes it's just saying, this is it feels totally different, but can we find those nuggets of things that make it less scary because we have these learnings that we can apply to some extent?
Yeah, totally. I think that's another interesting one. Just for the audience, P3, so public-private partnership, just in case people...
Thank you. Yeah.
No, cool. And also, like, we say a PPP, but then some people say like PPC with like the community as well. But yes, anyway, basically, we know that we have these big projects where governments work closely together and they have to. And like you said, it was like a more traditional project. And so, and you know, some of the things that we talk about in smart communities will be traditional projects sometime very soon. Perhaps, and some things will still continue to be innovative, and some things that, you know, maybe 5 years ago was like, wow, oh my God, how can we possibly do that? Now, you know, it's seemingly business as usual, which doesn't, again, happen by accident. It happens by a lot of hard work. But what I was going to say was, I think one of the key things about when we move into the future and, you know, building out these smart community projects is to learn from the stuff in the past. Like, we don't just throw everything out, like, oh, well, because there's so many, and that's true of people and skills and like approaches, but we build on those because we know that we just can't keep doing it the same way. But there are some elements that we can that make people feel that, you know, we know work and work in those certain circumstances. So I think that's a really great kind of lesson. It's just like, well, we've done a project like this before. Yeah, it wasn't in fiber and you know, that part's new, but actually this piece is actually quite similar. What worked well, what didn't work well, but it also gives us an opportunity to shift and change those pieces that didn't work quite so well, which I think is I think sometimes there's too much focus on what's new and what's going to be different and whatever, when actually we could learn from some of the bits and pieces that we did in the past as well.
Which in itself is smart, right? Because then you're not reinventing the whole wheel. You may find that different spokes are more important today than they used to be.
Yeah, and I often talk about, like, you know, you can't use yesterday's thinking to build tomorrow's future or something along those lines. But we can take the bits that work, right? Because it's we're still at the end of the day trying to still a project. It's still, yeah. Anyway, that was great convo. Thanks for indulging me. I am keen to hear more about you, though. So people, just say people haven't listened to the other episodes because they're going to go and binge those after this one.
Obviously.
And so tell us a little bit more around what you do now, and then we'll move into some of the things that have changed in the last kind of 18 months since we last spoke.
Perfect. So the journey really of how what I do and the organization I do it with is the Dallas Innovation Alliance just celebrated its 8th birthday, which is kind of amazing. And I know it's wild.
Congratulations. Happy birthday.
Oh, gracious. 8's my favorite number too. This is going to be the best year ever. I've decided already. So we were founded initially, you know, in coming this concept of smart cities, starting to kind of bake a little bit and starting to see where those intersection points were, and really felt like if Dallas could get ahead of it or certainly put dedicated resources behind it, there would be an amazing number of benefits to come from that. And so working closely with the mayor and the city manager, we essentially pitched this freestanding nonprofit coalition model in order to be able to tackle it. So we could put, again, dedicated resources organizationally towards it, bring everyone to the table, move quickly. And so through that, the goal was to support the city of Dallas becoming a smart city. And so we kind of plunged forward from there and had wonderful support from academia and the public sector and the private sector, et cetera, and have done a ton of work. And then always knew that, especially in Dallas, Fort Worth, people cross county lines every day and that they want things to work. And so we always knew a regional approach was critical. And so we launched that, ironically, right at the beginning of the pandemic in 2020, but really immediately saw how important that function was during times of emergency and now times of just tackling big problems.
So give us a bit of a day-to-day necessarily, but like, what are some of the problems that you, or the elements or the components that you collaborate on, and how it's kind of different to the traditional approach?
So one of the things that we do every year is we refresh what are the core priorities or priority topics for each organization. And I'll tell you that since 2018, the digital divide and internet access, and we've talked a little bit about this before, but that's been, you know, Operation Goal A for the Dallas Innovation Alliance and building programs to get folks connected to internet and all the things that they need. So we look at digital equity as a fundamental piece of the work we do, but in terms of how we bring people together to look at what's the stack of digital infrastructure necessary to support a human, you know, in their home, but how does it support a city operating more efficiently? How does it play into that? But, you know, the bottom line is you need the basic, and then you need all the things that layer on top of it to get to things like flying cars, right? Like, you're going to have all of these foundational elements. But the key is, how does it, bringing enough people together and enough different people together so that you look at what are all of the problems that one area can solve, and how can I make sure that I understand the human element and what people need, as well as, you know, we're trying to completely upgrade all of our traffic signals, and we don't just want it to be a dynamic system, but we want it to do these five other things. But so what we're really trying to do is look at what is the end game of various communities and say, okay, can we find a single solution that's the simplest as possible to pay for and to implement so it helps everyone? So that's a little bit about that, getting people in a room that, again, maybe like, why am I in a room or why am I here? This is about climate action and I work in X department. And I'm like, well, because to do all the climate action things, first we need you and your guys to commit to this type of improvement or this type of a project, because there's that whole value chain that comes into play.
That's great. Thanks for sharing that. I think that to bring people in the room, it seems a bit like, just seems naff to say, but it's just so powerful, you know, and whether it's a virtual room or a physical room, I think, you know, we have a combination of those things now. But just having those conversations, the amount of times that, you know, even working in a contracting to one large organization, you bring a couple of the departments in a room and, you know, magic can happen, right? Mm-hmm. So I guess a couple of things. I'm really keen for you to, if you've got like an example of something that was a bit wild and wacky, where people you're talking about, like, people go, why am I in this room? But like, some of those linkages, I suppose, that might not seem very obvious at all. So I don't know whether you've got something, I haven't prepped you on this, but whether you've got a project or something that you like, because then it can kind of show the audience, you know, whatever area they're working in, how you can really link in that systems approach when we talk about communities.
No, for sure. A couple come to mind, like a specific gathering that we did, and this is also digital inclusion focused, but we worked with the Federal Reserve Bank to pull a bunch of folks in the room, but they, you know, I was able to kind of curate the invite list. And so the types of organizations I brought in, that my first question when we opened was, is there someone in this room you've never met before? And every person raised their hand. And I said, that's the point, because we all sit in the same rooms with the same people all the time. There were nonprofits focused specifically on data analytics and child poverty. There were some that were focused on, you know, kind of the direct, you know, education system. There were some focused on housing. And most of them all loosely knew, you know, internet is very important, but it wasn't necessarily a focus. But when we looked at the aha moments were, I didn't realize this tool could help me help my clients so much more efficiently, or, oh, I see why we should, you know, but so they really started to see how this issue relates to them and how they relate to each other and form partnerships that would never have been on their radar before, again, but to solve the same problem. And then what would another one be? Like, we were getting together this is one of my favorite projects I definitely want to talk about, is when we did the Dallas County Smart County Blueprint in 2022. And then one of the first kind of project use cases coming out of it was about drones and robotics. And so we had 7 departments on the phone, and some of them just were interested and didn't know anything about drones or robotics. And some of them had a very specific problem they thought that those solutions could solve. But we came out of it and the public works department, sanitation, fleet, public safety, illegal dumping, all of them were in a room. And what we realized was that same solution could solve 3 departments' problems. And so then they all started looking at collective purchasing and like, I didn't realize that this could also do this. And so sometimes it's just educating people first before they even realize technology can solve one of their problems. So it's always fun.
Yeah. No, totally. And I really like that. And I guess you providing that mechanism for people to get together and is really important. Like, I mean, obviously, you know that because that's what you do. But I guess it's like exponentially, not even the word, like what's the word where it's just like, okay, bringing people together, but having somebody focusing, some resources associated with that, then actually allows the action to happen. Because bringing people together, the first part is the conversation and those, but without the kind of, you know, drive and you know, actionability there, then it stops in the conversation, right?
I could sit around and pontificate all day long, but if you don't get to who's going to raise their hand or is there some kind of forward motion step, then again, and then you lose people. So if you're right, if you're building a collaborative and that's the whole goal, if nobody ever has anything to do, why are they going to keep spending valuable time? Even if they love those conversations, it's hard to justify internally to keep showing up. So there's all kinds of different mechanisms to figure out how we can get learnings in a tangible way while we're looking at these massively weighty, you know, 10, 15, 20 year visions. How do we break that down to keep everybody feeling invested too?
Okay, let's go to, you know, we last had a chat around 18 months ago. So what's been happening since then? What's different? What's exciting? What has excited you in the last kind of 18 months?
Oh gosh, so much. I think, well, one thing, and we, you and I for sure hear this all the time, or I think we both have the same impression that just the fact that smart cities, the definition of it has become so much more human-centric. I think every year that definition of really saying, this is a holistic approach, this is a community-driven approach, is just really encouraging to me, because they're all real problems to solve, but ultimately we are trying to help people, you know, in one way or the other. And so I love that movement. I think what excites me that I've been nerding out about a lot and digging into is around freight movement, which sounds bizarre, but in terms of efficiency and logistics and also how are we going to intermix traditional fuel and electrification is like super geeked out about all kinds of applications for that. And how are we creating areas for heavy duty freight? There's so much, I think there's a gap between all of the investment in single occupancy vehicles, kind of single use chargers. But I'm like, but where are all the fleets going to charge? Where is all the public sector fleets? Where are all the Amazon, you know, electric vehicles when they continue to move that way? And please God, don't have everybody building their own. Like, let's get them in a room and say, you don't know when you're going to have all these. Why don't you build a facility where the capacity can shift based on use and perhaps even can provide other benefits to the community through microgrid or resiliency, you know, redundancy. There's still a lot of concern about the grid in Texas. So it's a kind of a uniquely critical layer that I try and always kind of look at things through is what is the impact on on that kind of capacity? And how do we make sure with that heat, we have to have locations for residents to be safe too? So that kind of emergency response kind of component applied to a lot of different types of emergencies we didn't see, you know, 10, 15 years ago, I think are really interesting. And if we can make a degree of movement toward being prepared for cyber attacks, for different things like that, I think that's kind of the fun stuff. So I'm rambling, but electrification, AI, but specifically ethics and privacy related to AI. How are we know we're using that responsibly? What's the responsibility of the public sector to residents? All kinds of stuff.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, like we said, it's continuing to increase as more things come online. But that, again, just sounds a bit silly. There's so many things. Like, it's already at, like, it's not at peak, but it's like, it's a really big issue. It's not an emerging issue. It's an issue that we need to be thinking about now. You know, like cyber, but yeah, the privacy elements of it. And excitingly, we'll be talking all about this in Barcelona.
We sure will. I can't wait. We're getting real close.
We are.
Yeah, let's just get on a plane now. Let's just go.
Yeah. Yeah. Why not? So we will be speaking on a panel together, which Jennifer just told me. I didn't know yet. So breaking news, which I love. And yeah, Barcelona on the 7th of November, which will be very exciting. So I've been doing a lot of stuff in around human factors and in cybersecurity and things like that. And again, like things you're not necessarily thinking about day to day until you have to. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's an interesting topic. It's so important as well. And wild too. Like it's a bit of I've been listening to another podcast called Darknet Diaries, which when everyone's been all of the 350 or however many episodes here, then they can go and listen to Darknet Diaries. But just the wild, like the stuff that's happening behind the scenes of this, you know, kind of really big level, but looking at those really small things that went awry at the beginning that then allowed this huge thing to happen and like that could have been stopped through human elements, which I find very fascinating.
That's wild. Well, and, you know, we all track back to, you know, we've all been giving our data away for a long time, longer than anyone really understood. And so it comes back to, would that have made a difference if we were having these conversations 15 years ago? Or is this really kind of an evolution that we didn't know what we didn't know? And how do we look at this now? So I think to some point it's moot, but I do think there will be the next thing, right? Where can we start cataloging the learnings from right now to maybe be able to recognize subsequent needs for whatever is coming next.
Yeah, it kind of goes to your point about feeling empowered. So I think like being informed so then we can be empowered is something. Mm-hmm. So, and I think we're getting more informed now, but again, can be quite overwhelming. So it's like similar to what you were saying earlier around like when we have that kind of focus on something that we can then start those actions. But we kind of need other people, the collaborators together to kind of help us to know what to focus on. Because there's so many things that we could be focusing on.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But we won't solve that right now.
Maybe not today. After a good sleep, we'll come back together and we'll have fixed it all.
Yeah, I agree. I'm looking at the time. We've been talking for a long time. Not a long time, not enough time, but I do want to talk about the future. And also, if there's any other projects and things that you wanted to shout out about them.
So I think speaking to collaboration and kind of this interdisciplinary nature, one of the programs that we're launching, the first cohort will be in spring semester of 2024, but this concept of what we're calling the Urban Resilience Fellows Program. And the whole goal from that is to work cross-disciplinary across departments within a university to solve a specific problem. And also with different levels of education. So you have these teams that are both that coming from different disciplines, but also different levels of education to embed, I kind of call them the SWAT teams, you know, go into a city or whomever the host is and solve a complex problem through multiple lenses, you know. And so again, it kind of speaks to that spirit of, I would never looked at it that way because I'm not an engineer. I'm a social science person, but my God, that's extraordinary. And that is a key component to finding a solution to this problem. And so we're just really excited to kick off the first cohort next spring and grateful for the universities that are partnering with us on that first round. that's one of the things I'm really excited about right now. And the other, I'm actually talking at Smart City Expo US next week. I'm moderating a panel on how do you prepare for the global stage. So it's really about how do cities prepare for things like Formula One and the World Cup and the Olympics, and how are we incorporating innovation into that? What is the role of a smart global event? And so that's something I'm really geeked out about right now with the World Cup coming, and obviously everybody is, but what I keep thinking, and with some of our member cities, you know, have come to me and said, you know, how I've wanted to do fill in the blank project forever and I can never get it prioritized. I might actually be able to get it done because of this event. And so I think if we're able to kind of leverage what did we already know we needed, or what, you know, what do we know would benefit our area well after 2026? Can we use this as a catalyst to really come together and get things done that would never have gotten done during the slog of regular operations? And so I think learning from all of the host cities and those that have done massive events, I'm hoping to talk to a lot of people in Barcelona about that, because talk about a global perspective on what was the learning. But so this concept of leveraging another motivation to solve much larger problems, this new concept for a fellows program for students, and then there's a number of others, but I'll stop there.
That's awesome. So we're in Southeast Queensland in Brisbane, be hosting the Olympics in 2032. So that's of great interest to me as well. So I might I'll have a chat with you afterwards as well. Good luck with the preso. It'll be awesome as always. Unfortunately, I won't be there. I would love to be at every Smart City event around the world.
I know. It's just a tough time of year too. Because the Q4 I keep telling people, please distribute them more evenly. We could all go to more, I think. But I think it'll be a lot of fun. And what's contrary to my brain about things like, you know, you talk about 2032, even 2026, to me feels, and it used to feel really far away until I really understood how long these projects take. So cities are, you know, they're like, we're really like, we've got barely enough time at this point. And so then it really becomes, again, where can technology play a part to accelerate getting some of these projects done that perhaps could be done without hardscape? They could be done with technology. So I'm just really fascinated to see how do you know what the threat's going to be in 2 years or 3 years? How do you know what are drones capable of in 3 years? You know, what are we looking at and what's available? And so there's a little bit of crystal ball, I think, for all of these host communities. So it's a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yes, there's a lot. Speaking of the future, which is not that far away, it's never that far away. But yeah, I agree. I think to think that like 2026 used to feel a long time, whereas now it's just around the corner. And 2032, not that far either. But the future. So what are the emerging trends that people aren't talking about enough?
The very cool thing I think about right now, someone is talking about almost everything. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like where there were a couple of years ago, you know, there were some blinders around fill in the blank. And now anything that's come to mind, I'm like, no, but actually Chelsea Collier in Austin is directly laser focused on X, which hadn't been talked about enough in years past. Everybody go back and watch Chelsea's episodes too on the podcast. But, you know, a year ago, I would have said we are not meaningfully talking about ethics and AI and protections and things like that. I think that conversation is massive at this point. I think continued discussions and really frank discussions, particularly in places like Texas, about how are we going to get people out of their cars, right? From a climate change perspective, how are we going to deal with, you know, massive weather events? And I think, you know, I'm going off on a tangent now, but property taxes are going up here. But the thing that I'm like, what are people going to do? My property insurance, like my insurance on my house went up almost 100%, almost doubled year over year. And that's because of all the roof damage from a hailstorm last year, not to my house, but generally. And I'm just like, the impacts on every level of this evolving threat. And can we have a cohesive conversation on what it will take and what it will look like from the concept, from the perspective of the banks and the environmentalists and the government? And again, can we find that common ground, knowing that the end goal for different sectors is different, and they feel fundamentally opposed in some cases, but I don't believe that we can't find a middle ground. So I think pragmatically breaking down some really highly charged issues are just conversations I hope more people are brave enough to pull together.
Brave conversations and courageous collaborations.
I love that. Perfect. Much more succinctly said than I just did. Thank you.
No, you gave me the gold and I just put it into two words because I enjoy alliteration. Well, four words. Hey, what did I say? Brave conversations and collaborative. No, courageous collaboration.
And courageous collaboration. Yep. Dig it.
Hashtag that. Okay, where to next for smart communities?
I think pulling in multi-generational in a more meaningful way. So what we would love to see is more empowerment of younger generations impacting their parents. And we're seeing that a lot in our digital inclusion work is classes that incorporate both children and adults concurrently allows them to bond internal as a unit, but also allows for much, much more broad impacts. But so I'm hoping to see that lead to more civically engaged younger generation and also parents that are empowered that may have felt very unheard for most of their lives.
Yeah, I think that's really powerful. And then even just, you know, that the next, like the grandchildren impacting the grandparents as well, even on just like social, you know, kind of big issues in progress, but being able to have conversations that aren't so polarized as well, like understanding why people, you know, come from those different perspectives, but opening up our minds to seeing things a bit differently. And again, not having to agree on everything, but I do think it adds a lot of value in terms of like impact, like broad impact, but personally as well, because if you can use like new things, learning things together, like you were just saying, just you can come closer as a family unit or a, you know, work colleagues, whatever, or just a community collaboration. You've got something in common, even if these things out here, you might learn, but it's not about preaching, oh, well, I believe this and you believe that, you know, and you can imagine what those conversations could be, and they could be on a whole range of different topics. But if we come together to learn about, I don't know, something like ethics in AI or something, or what should I, or I need to, or the one-on-one on learning how to code, or it could be anything, a community garden, whatever it is, that common kind of thing that you're, you know, learning together, bringing different experiences, kids sharing, old generation sharing, then you can kind of start to have better conversations, which then might lead to some learnings, you know, and minds opening up a bit more broadly.
Amen to that.
Solving the world's problems right here on Smart Community Podcast.
Absolutely.
Well, Jennifer, it's been so great to have you again on the podcast. And I am so excited that we're going to see each other in Barcelona as well.
And I as well. Again, we're going to blink and we'll be on the plane.
I know. One last question. How can people connect with you?
Oh, beautiful. Well, you can certainly visit either of our websites. So www.ntxia.org or dallasinnovationalliance.com. But you can find us on LinkedIn, Twitter, all of the major interwebs, not TikTok. I'll be honest, I'm too old for that yet to figure that out. But no, we're around.
Excellent. Well, we'll put the links in the show notes. We'll put the links to the other episode for yourself as well as Chelsea in the show notes as well. I love the work that you do. I love the work Chelsea does. There's so many amazing kick-ass women doing great things in the States. So yeah. Thanks again.
All over the world.
That's true. Well,
present company included.
Oh, thank you. It's been fun. And I'm really looking forward to seeing you in person because it's been a while. Have we actually met in person? I feel like we did one time.
Once, but very briefly. Very sad, like depressingly briefly, like in passing. And we tried.
Ships in the night. We'll make sure that we are in person, we'll take a selfie to prove it and we'll put that on LinkedIn or something along those lines. But for now, we'll say goodbye. I've really enjoyed this conversation.
Ditto. Have a great one.
You too.
Thanks for having me.
Bye.
Bye.
Are you looking for an engaging speaker, MC, or facilitator for your next big event? Then we've got you covered. Zoe is a go-to speaker, MC, and conversation facilitator with a difference. She's a master at simplifying the complex and making connections you might never see. Book Zoe for your next event. Email hello@mysmart.community or head over to her speaker page, www.mysmart.community/speaking.
Thanks so much for listening to the Smart Community Podcast. Show notes for this episode and all other episodes are available on our website, mysmart.community/podcast. If you have any questions for us or any of our guests, you can email hello@mysmart.community. You can also find us on the socials. We are on LinkedIn and Twitter @smartcomhq. That's com with two M's. If you are enjoying the podcast, please hit subscribe so you never miss an episode. And we would love for you to leave us a rating and review at wherever you listen. This really helps us reach more ears and eyes, so thank you for your support. As always, we hope you enjoyed listening to this episode as much as we enjoyed making it.
The Smart Community Podcast is what you're looking for.